Welcome back to the Business Forum Show. I'm Kevin Hunter. My guests in studio today are attorneys from Lohman Abdo. Bob, before the break, we've been talking about documentation that business owners need to have in place. But what do you say to the business that's just a single operator, sole proprietor type business? They might be thinking they don't need the documentation. What advice do you have for them?
In general, when you're by yourself, you're dealing with yourself, but you still have to be concerned about how you appear to the public. Mm-hmm. Because if you appear to the public, and a lot of small business owners like to say it's Joe Blow grocery store or something, and you hold yourself out as an individual, you may be liable as an individual. This still gets back to the piercing the corporate veil scenario, where you should really take and deal with the formalities of the business itself, at least the basic stuff. I don't remember if Jeff had talked about the fact that you got to keep your books and records straight. You can't separate. You can't have them commingled together. You can't be using your income from your business to pay your own personal bills.
Sure.
So there are a number of things you still have to do to keep in place a shield against liability for corporate debt.
You know, and to Bob's point earlier about the employment agreement, for these sole proprietors that, you know, in their own mind they're a sole proprietor, but then you hear, oh, I work with this guy, I contract with him, right? You've got somebody working for you, but then you're referring to them as an independent contractor or something, you know, not an employee, right? That's probably one of the biggest issues right now that the IRS is looking at is misclassification of workers. Someone that may be thinking that they have somebody as an independent contractor simply because they want to avoid the benefits and the withholding taxes and stuff that goes into having an employee. You know, the IRS has a 20-factor test as to what that is. If a business owner is exerting a significant degree of control over that worker's day in terms of where they are and what they're doing for the business owner, you can call them whatever you want. The IRS is going to end up calling them an employee, and then you're going to pay some significant tax, interest, and penalties retroactively for the period of time that you thought they were an independent contractor. And they may have claims against you as a business owner for things, so let's say you're offering 401k or something else to your employees and not to that person, you could have a problem there. So,
or workers' comp.
Yep, workers' comp. That's a huge issue right now for some of these small business owners that are maybe trying to avoid some of the headaches of having employees. Well, it could be even a bigger headache to determine that you, in fact, do have an employee.
And to merc that up a little bit, Jeff, is through those independent contractor relationships, you don't know what the business entity owns as a result. So you could have an independent contractor drafting software, designing logos, inventing patents for you, and without some sort of chain of title or some sort of written agreement, it's very unclear. So it can hurt you both ways in terms of how that falls together.
Yeah, you can notice an overriding theme here. The more paperwork you have, the more definition you have to your legal relationships, whether it be your business entity or your vendors or people working for you on whatever basis, the more you're going to save in the long run on headaches and legal problems if you take time to do that measure of prevention up front.
To give a little bit more detail to what Jeff said, as everybody knows, if you're an employee of a company, you have to withhold both Social Security and the FICA stuff, and your employer has to match it. And there's a trust fund that if the employer doesn't make the payments on that, not just the company, but the person who has control of the checkbook are liable for it. So the individual officer or director or whoever has the authority is personally liable for it. If, in fact, an independent contractor, a person that's been treated as such or thought to be such, turns out to be an employee and hasn't paid their FICA on both sides, the individual who is in control of the entity is responsible and liable for it, and the IRS will come against them, state of Minnesota will as well, and they'll take and, you know, file liens against the president's or treasurer's or controller or whoever writes the checks assets as well as the entity's assets.
It gets to be a pretty nasty pitch. I've seen situations where that has happened in the past, and you know, it's not just the money that they have avoided paying over that period, but all the fines and even jail time could be a consequence.
One other thing that I don't know if Jeff got into the detail of it, but you know, part of it is the buy-sell provisions. If we talked about whether or not an employee or an owner leaves the firm or gets fired from the firm, very often you want to have a provision in your agreement that says if they're no longer an employee, there's an option on the part of those that are there to take and buy them out. You have to set a formula for buying them out, or come up with some method of coming up with a purchase price. It might be an appraisal, it might be something else. There are all kinds of ways of slicing mm-hmm. that piece of bread. But the idea is that you want to take and set that the method of dealing with that up front, because you really don't want to have somebody looking over your shoulder after they've been let go. Those sure. that are left, probably left not on good terms, and if they still have a right, and they would have a right to books, records, information, they can be a pain, and you want to make sure that that's resolved up front.
Greg, I'd like to go to you. Besides issues in setting up a business, what other legal issues should business owners be thinking about?
One of the things that Bob, Jeff, and I think we could say we specialize in is helping businesses commercialize or exploit their various businesses. And one of the very critical pieces to that is developing and managing your portfolio of intellectual properties. Mm-hmm. So intellectual properties are things like trademarks, the names of your products, potentially the name of your business. When you pick a name for your business through the Secretary of State process, it's a very simple, straightforward process, but what it doesn't do for you is it doesn't give you any sense as to whether you are potentially infringing upon another company's trademark rights. Mm-hmm. Just a real quick example is a brewery that opened up here in Minnesota ended up getting a cease and desist letter from a brewery from another state. Trademark rights are national in scope. And so a brewery, for instance, in California could come and potentially close down and claim infringement against a Minnesota company for selling goods and products in that class of goods, in this case, beer. The ramifications for infringement are steep. Not only is it things like lost profits from the other company, your profits as the infringing company, but you know, a very, you know, sort of unthought of but very important piece of damages is recovery of attorney's fees. So the company in California who might have spent $100,000 chasing you down can recover that money from you from the corporation directly here in Minnesota. So clearing names is really important. There's some other types of costs and things that kind of go along with having to rebrand. Like for instance, replacing signage on a building, or in the case of the brewery, new bottles, new cans, new equipment, new everything. So we're strong advocates of clearing branding considerations, or at least looking at branding considerations on the front end. It is a very dark art in terms of picking and selecting a trade name, but we do what we can to get you to a point of comfort and hopefully mitigate some of those expenses down the road. But along those lines, things like inventions, patents, software, copyrights, look and feel of your websites, all of those fall into different types and buckets of intellectual property. And we want to make sure that your chain of title for all of these are well established, so that as you move toward an exit strategy, and our firm recently held a nice conference a couple months ago at Elsie's talking about this very topic, you want to make sure that the value in your company stays extremely high and you avoid some of the pitfalls with using things like open source code, which can devalue a company's source code portfolio immediately, or just having to go back and figure out what the chain of title. So in Jeff's example, if you had been using independent contractor agreements for many decades, how do you go back and make sure that the work that was done by those contractors is now owned by the company? Going back and cleaning up after the fact is very difficult and costly. So there are four big categories of intellectual property. Trademarks, like we talked about, your brand equity. Copyrights, which are things like your software, your logos, your designs, your creative works. Patents, which are inventions, methods, and I just throw this out here very quickly. The world of patents is going to change dramatically starting in 2013. We have new legislation kicking in March of 2013, which potentially could force a small business to rethink its overall invention strategy. So it's something that if you do have inventorship in the works, that you look at this issue, because it is one of those types of issues. If you miss the opportunity, you can't go back and recover from it. And then trade secrets. So if you do have something that is confidential, keep it confidential. Make sure your employees and your independent contractors know to keep your secrets confidential. Once the cat's out of the bag, it's hard to put it back in.
You talked about an exit strategy at the beginning, mm-hmm. Kevin, and the question is, when you come to buy or sell a business, the basis of your business is sometimes very much founded in your intellectual property. And if you're a buyer of a business, you're going to want to make sure that the integrity and the validity of that is there and solid.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what you're selling. It's part of your goodwill. And it's an important thing when we represent clients in the purchase or the sale of their business, that we make sure the basics are done. And that includes not only your books and records, but it also includes your intellectual property, as well as the contracts that you have that form the basis of your business. And that's one of the things that you get done up front. Make sure you get it done so that you're not using the wrong branding that you end up getting sued on, mm-hmm. Where you label a product or a business or something else with it. That ends up is ultimately devalued in terms of the amount of money that you can get for your business.
We're here today with attorneys Bob Abdo, Greg Perlberg, and Jeff O'Brien with Lohman Abdo. I'm Kevin Hunter. We'll be back here on the Business Forum Show with a lot more you need to know about the legal aspects of your business.